We are afraid of things outside of ourselves that we cannot control. We worry about becoming ill, aging, and losing the things we treasure most. We try to hold tight to the things we care about, our possessions, our property, our loved ones. But holding tightly doesn't ease our fear. Eventually, one day, we will have to let go of all of them. We cannot take them with us. Words of the late Vietnamese Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, in his 2012 book, Fear, Essential Wisdom for Getting Through the Storm. Reading Thay's words, I'm reminded of a story I first heard from insight meditation teacher Jack Kornfield. An extraordinarily wealthy business magnate had died. As friends and relatives were gathered at his graveside, one friend turned to another and quietly asked, "How much did he leave?" "Everything," was the other friend's reply. Roshi Norman Fisher, in his 2021 book, When I Greet You, When, excuse me, I'm sorry, When You Greet Me, I Bow, offers this related observation. Buddhism teaches that behind all our fears is our inability to actually appreciate, on a visceral level, this truth of impermanence. Unable to accept that we are fading away all the time, we are fearful about the future, as if somehow, if everything went exactly right, we could be preserved for all time. To put this another way, all our fears are actually displacements of the one great fear, the fear of death. Roshi Fisher is describing the role played in Buddhism by our inability to accept the truth of impermanence as being behind all our fears. This may strike some of you as a radical claim. There seem so many threats in our modern world, from the spread of authoritarian politics to mass murder to risks of nuclear war to the global climate crisis and many others. Each of these threats elicit widespread fear, and each can seem distinct with their own unique causes and conditions. And yet, Roshi Fisher claims Buddhism takes the view that, quote, all our fears are actually displacements of the one great fear, the fear of death. How are we to understand this? In Buddhist teaching, impermanence is the first of the three so-called marks of existence. Anicca, or impermanence. Dukkha, suffering or unsatisfactoriness. And anatta, or non-self. These three are referred to as marks of existence because they're universal. All conditioned phenomena are impermanent, constantly changing, arising and passing away. Unsatisfactoriness is pervasive. We are constantly not getting what we want, getting what we don't want, and losing what we have and wish to keep. And there is nothing having an independent self nature. All, including each of us, is interdependently co-arising. Nothing and no one standing alone. I doubt that any of you would disagree with the reality of that first mark of existence, impermanence. Even the most solid and stable appearing granite of Tucson's nearby mountains we know to have not always been as it appears today, and will be worn down to sand at some future time. And none of us doubts that we each will not be here in this human form a century from now. And yet, as Roshi Fisher points out, knowing and accepting the truth of impermanence on an embodied visceral level are not the same. We don't really accept that we are fading away all the time. We often act as though we will be the one exception in all the universe to impermanence. Unable to truly accept impermanence, we fear death, that seeming finality of personal impermanence. And this, it's claimed, is the fear of which all other fears are displacements. This is not a claim unique to Buddhism. Within contemporary social psychology, what is termed terror management theory makes a similar claim. Terror management theory, first developed in 1986 by social psychologist Jeff Greenberg of the University of Arizona, and his colleagues Sheldon Solomon and Tom Pazinski, proposes that fear of death, typically not consciously available, motivates much of human behavior. In order to manage this, quote, terror, we adopt a particular cultural worldview and work to maintain self-esteem, providing a sense of meaning and symbolic immortality. In research using various ways to increase mortality salience, when participants are reminded of their mortality, they tend to cling more strongly to their cultural worldview, including various beliefs, religion, and nationality, to feel part of something that is enduring. According to terror management theory, existential fear and anxiety are reduced by such seemingly enduring cultural worldviews that provide order, meaning, and stability. And our sense of personal value or self-esteem is enhanced by living up to the standards of that culture. Conversely, when confronted by the reality of death, we may become more aggressive toward those with different beliefs, as opposing views threaten our protective worldview. Terror management theory has been proposed to explain a range of current social and political phenomena. Research has shown that reminding people of death leads to increased prejudice against outgroups, intensified political polarization, and greater desire for cultural conformity. Terror management theory has also been employed to explain behaviors related to serious illness, such as increased focus on legacy and family, or even actions that would seem to reflect denial of the illness. Criticisms of the theory include that reliance on cultural worldviews may not account for diverse, especially non-Western, approaches to understanding death and meaning. This criticism of terror management theory is thus also a bridge to considering how Buddhist practice addresses our difficulty of accepting impermanence. Zazen, our sitting meditation, is clearly a practice that increases acceptance of impermanence. Each time that mind is carried off into recalled past events or imagined futures, And we gently bring awareness back to the embodied presence of this moment. We have the opportunity to notice that fear is typically in anticipation of what might happen next, not a response to what is here and now. That ferocious bite of the bear is certainly painful. However, what we fear is what may happen next. Here and now is just this, which may be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, but not in and of itself fearful. In just this present moment, without imagination of the future, there is no fear. Zazen is thus a practice of liberation from fear that is future-focused. Zazen, as well as mindful attention to the present moment in daily activities, are also practices of liberation from future anticipating fear that arises from a preoccupation with threatening events that occurred in the past. Excuse me. Thich Nhat Hanh, in that same 2012 book from which I quoted at the start of today's talk, wrote, so sorry. When we recognize that we have a habit of replaying old events and reacting to new events as if they were old ones, we can begin to notice when that habit energy comes up. We can then gently remind ourselves that we have another choice. We can look at the moment as it is, a fresh moment, and leave the past for a time when we can look at it compassionately. If we are well grounded in the present moment, we can look skillfully at the past and learn from it without being sucked in and overwhelmed by it. Now, certainly, such grounding in the present moment and the ability to look calmly and skillfully at the past requires repeated practice for liberation from fear arising from preoccupation with the past to be possible, particularly if we have experienced significant trauma in the past. Another relevant Buddhist practice involves periodically recalling what are called the five remembrances. Five remembrances. These remembrances are, first, I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape old age. Second, I am of the nature to get sick. I cannot escape sickness. Third, I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. Fourth, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. And fifth, I inherit the results of my actions of body, speech, and mind. My actions are my continuation. As Roshi Fisher emphasizes, the point of these remembrances isn't to frighten. Quite the opposite. The way to overcome fear is to face it and become familiar with it. Since fear is always fear about the future, to face the present fear and see that it is misplaced is to reduce it. When I give myself over for a period of time, or perhaps on a regular basis, to the contemplation of the realities of my aging and dying, I become used to them. I begin to see them differently. Little by little, I come to see that I am living and dying all the time, changing all the time, and that this is what makes life possible and precious. In fact, a life without impermanence is not only impossible, it is entirely undesirable. Everything we prize in living comes from the fact of impermanence. The beauty of plum and cherry blossoms in spring is all the more glorious in their brief presence, so quickly falling in a breeze. Our gorgeous Tucson winter sunsets are so beautiful precisely because they only briefly abide and then pass away. Our love for those close to us is all the more dear and poignant in awareness that no relationship is forever, no matter how much we might wish it to be so. That fifth remembrance also reminds us that we are not only impermanent, but also no thing at all. No thing at all. In reality, each of us and the entire universe are constantly changing interdependent processes rather than entities. As I often say, there are only verbs, interdependent processes, no nouns or static independent things. Remembering that we are actually interdependent processes and actualizing this awareness in our day-to-day relationships and in our practice together as a Sangha, we are building community and building the hope that helps get us through the mortal fear that can so often arise in our present time and place. I was reminded of this again yesterday, watching the celebration of life for the late Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, Sr., broadcast in its entirety on C-SPAN. Each eloquent remembrance was an embodiment of the hope found and rekindled in relationship, in building community. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote, "Community building is the most important action of our century. As individuals, we have suffered tremendously due to the predominance of individualism. Families are breaking down, and society has become deeply divided. For the 21st century to be a time of spirituality, the spirit of togetherness must guide us. We should learn to do things together, to share our ideas and the deep aspirations in our hearts. We have to learn to see the Sangha, our community of spiritual support, as our own body. We need each other in order to practice solidly, practice freedom and compassion, so that we can remind each other that there's always hope. And because we are each actually processes, the interactions that we are unfold as ongoing causes that have effects, what we call karma, continuing endlessly throughout space and time." So I'll close with a few more wise words from Roshi Fisher. "There is no death. In what we call death, the body does not disappear. It continues its journey forth. Not a single element is lost. The body simply transforms into air and water and earth and sky. Our mind travels on too. Its passions, fears, loves, and energies continue on throughout this universe. Because we have lived, the world is otherwise than it would have been, and the energy of our life's activity travels onward, circulates, joins and rejoins others to make the world of the future. There is no death. There is only continuation. There is nothing to be afraid of. Gosho. So I am going to turn it back over to Reverend Linda now.